We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Arteta! What a strike!
Euro 2020 arrives to spare us having to focus entirely on transfer rumors and spare Arsenal from having to actually do any transfers. This is the Arsenal Vision Post-Match Podcast. My name is Elliot Smith. You can block me on Twitter, Yankee Gunner. We are on the doorstep of the Euros. We are on the brink of a tournament that you could say is almost as prestigious as what the United States just won, the CONCACAF Nations League. So prestigious, in fact, that I think it required us to win two games to win it. The second game being complete batshit madness. So if you're into that sort of thing, it was full on CONCACAF. And I have to say I enjoyed it from a purely spectacle standpoint. There was also fan unruliness. There was CONCACAF refereeing drama. Everything you look for from this region. But UEFA, well, they've got a slightly bigger, if not more prestigious tournament starting. If you missed it yesterday, Phil Costa joined me to profile every team, every group, a full-on preview of the Euros. And we will have a daily episode throughout the tournament every day of the week and sometimes on the weekends, depending how it plays out. There'll probably be 30 minutes or so recapping the day's games, headlines, key players, and looking ahead to the next big game. So should be fun and something to get you through the tournament, hopefully get you excited about it and invested in it if you're not. And if you are invested in it, a place that you can stay and get your news about the tournament and content about the tournament without having to wander off to some other podcast. We can't have that happening. And then you come back here with your other podcast germs on you and we start sharing podcast germs and that's how things spread. And haven't we had enough of things spreading? Just stay here. We got you covered. But if you do want to spread some germs, you can join us in Las Vegas to do that. August 19th to 22nd, we are now just days away from the official announcement. The website going up with the registration, it's going to be completely free. There'll be discounts for rooms at the fabulous Wynn Las Vegas, August 19th to 22nd. Clive will be there. Paul will be there. Scott will be there. I will be there. Jessica Black will be there. There will be some, I hate this word, but influencers. There'll be some broadcast people there and just generally, hopefully a lot of good Arsenal fans. I know Arsenal America is getting behind it. So we're really excited and hope that we will see you there. I think that's probably enough of that, and we should get to the football. There's transfer rumors to talk about and Euros to cover, so we will speed through all of that with Paul. You can find him on Twitter at Pause My Pants. I'll pause.
Woohoo! Influencers. What am I, chopped liver?
Yes, literally. Literally chopped liver. When I see you, I am going to put some kind of sauce on you and eat you.
Fava beans.
Yeah. And Tim, you can find him on Twitter at Stobardo. Hello, Tim.
Hello there.
Yep. And then Clive's on Twitter, ClivePFC. Hello, Clive.
Hello.
Pod's off to a flyer, as ever. Sue, we should probably push on then. Clive, I think first let's do a quick whip around of transfer stuff, transfer rumors. One of the things that I've been following pretty closely is the situation with Onana. It feels like the Leno relationship getting potentially strained. I mean, you hate to say it's getting strained just because someone reported that it's getting strained, because that could mean it is or it could mean it isn't, but that certainly is being reported at least at some level. And so now Onana's ban is reduced. So what's your feeling on where this is heading? I don't think first choice goalkeeper is a situation that Arsenal would have liked to have had to prioritize this summer. Do you think Leno could even go this summer? We could wind up bringing in two, one of them being Onana?
I don't know. I think...
That's not going to cover it. I need you to say definitively what will happen, and then we'll make fun of you when you're wrong.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't know. I'm more interested in the style of goalkeeper that Onana is, actually. And he's pretty good. He's different. He's very, very front-footed, and he's very spectacular and very strong and physical in what he does. And, yeah, we won't miss him if he ever plays for Arsenal, that's for sure. We won't miss him. And so... You know, there's lots of players that lots of people that say that position is underdeveloped, and he's the sort of goalkeeper that is the next generation potentially. You know, and I think it's going to be interesting if you do see him. It's going to be interesting to see what he does and how we accept him, and because he looks fantastic, but he looks like he's got a mistake in him all day long as well. You know, so but he won't die. He won't die wondering. You see what I mean? Mm. He's very brave in whatever he does. So. I love to see the development of football, full stop, and how it can develop. And when you watch the clips of him moving the ball, saving the ball, everything's just big. He's just big. And I like that, you know. And there are different ways to look at goalkeeper. You look at one, you've got a goalkeeper that's just basically full of presence like him. And you've got a goalkeeper looking back in history like David Seaman that you didn't really see, and he just catches the ball with very little fuss because his feet were so good and he could read the flight, etc.
Also full of presence.
Yeah. And so basically, I'm excited by the thought of him. I got to say that. I think he will be an interesting dynamic to the team if we were able to get him. On Leno himself, let's see what happens. He's got 2 years to go. Can go after 1 year, and there were rumours around the relationship with the goalkeeping coach. Not too sure. I'm not surprised, to be fair, because since the goalkeeping coach came on board, he wanted David Raya to come in. It doesn't make you feel confident when someone comes in, someone you're going to work with every single day, and he wants to bring in his own goalkeepers. It doesn't make you feel as though the club is long term for you. So, totally understand why he could be a bit miffed. But hey, let's see what happens. I'm not too worried. But Nana, that could be a smart Arsenal move.
Do you worry that, because the prices being quoted were a fraction of what he would have been once upon a time, do you worry that the reduction in the ban might lead other clubs to poke around, drive the price up a bit?
Could do. I think anywhere between, it was 2 million to 7 million. And yeah, it could happen. But let's see. There was a time when he was over 40, 50, 60 million at one time in the good old days pre-COVID, and when he was just off the back of the Champions League run, particularly against Spurs, where he did really, really well. A lot of those games leading up to that did well. So, yeah, let's see what happens. I don't fret. I'm trying to be really sanguine about rumours. I'm trying to enjoy them all. You know, I'm trying to enjoy them and take them for what they are and use them as an opportunity to research that player and see how they could mesh in our team rather than get hung up on each player like I used to do, not so distant.
Yeah, I think there's an interesting point here, which is when we're linked with a player, the right thing to do is probably try to understand that player as fully as possible, prepare yourself in terms of the knowledge that you can have about that player without deciding whether you like or hate the move right away, because rumors tend not to be true and most moves tend not to happen. Then when the move does happen, you will be fully prepared for maximum outrage. So I think don't use up the outrage on the rumor. Use that as the time to educate yourself so you have prepared the information necessary to write a 20-tweet thread on why the move is terrible once he shows up on the official website wearing an Arsenal shirt. So, Paul, in terms of Onana, the ban being reduced, could train as early as September, play as early as November. Before we talk Onana, I don't really understand the Leno situation, and I find a lot of things about it confusing. One thing is just taking the temperature of the fan base just on social media is dangerous, so you can always get it wrong, but it seems like there's not a lot of love for him particularly. I feel like people just really liked Emi Martinez, and some people would have preferred we kept him. I don't know that Leno has ever been anything other than really good, if not elite with his feet, certainly elite with his shot stopping and saves, and you know, really rescued us in a lot of situations. I don't think he's been bad enough to be disliked, and I certainly think he's been good enough to be liked. I still feel like there isn't a warmth to him. And again, always hard to take the temperature of the fan base over social media. So that could be wrong, but something seems to have short-circuited here. Are you surprised that there isn't more of an attachment to a player who, by my sort of eye test, seems like he's been pretty good for us?
Yeah, I am. Some people seem to, like, I think you and me are in that camp. And some people, I think blogs. I've heard him make the point a number of times too, and others. But I think on the whole, excuse me.
I didn't know you liked him that much, man. Yeah, yeah. Come on, keep it together. He's not that special.
Getting to me, guys. No, I think on the whole, you're...
Oh, my goodness. Is he your brother?
I'm trying to make up for the lack of passion in the fan base all on my own. I think you're right. There's in general, we're kind of a little cold to him. Maybe a little ungrateful. One doesn't want to get into gratitude for players. That all gets all...
Yeah, they get paid enough. Quick. That's their gratitude. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Like this year's just a very interesting, overused term, microcosm of the relationship with Leno and the travails of Arsenal. I mean, we started heavily leaning on this playing out from the back, and I think he got pretty good at playing at it. And, you know, it was a kamikaze playing out, the good kind of kamikaze. And we got quite good at it. And, you know, people would say that's the one part of our game we're pretty good at. And he got good with his feet, and his long-range distribution wasn't great, but that seemed to improve too. And then we kind of backpedaled from total kamikaze playing out to just kind of doing it in open play, not so much from kickouts. We kind of dialed it back a bit and weren't as committed to it. And then we had some mistakes, coincidentally, at the same time, and we kind of dialed back it a little bit. And then I didn't think he was quite as good, or we were quite as good at it, and he looked a little more nervy at it. And it was almost like we weren't as committed, and so mentally we weren't quite into it. I don't think it's his natural game, and it may be where we very much think we want to go. And if you look at City's keeper and you look at Liverpool's keeper, they've made a distinct commitment to getting not just adapting a good all-rounder keeper, but getting a guy who's a bit of a lunatic with the ball at his feet, which is where Onana comes in. And so, you know, maybe from Leno's side, he's not feeling quite the same level of love when he sees the efforts last year. Maybe the reaction of the fan base, but I don't think that is too much to it. I think these players mainly care what the manager and their squad and the club thinks about them. But yeah, we're kind of funny about Leno. The other thing I remember about him was when we were going through our toughest patch, he was one of the guys who would come to the microphone and speak well on behalf of the club and what we needed to do and what the squad needed to do and that we needed to pull up our socks. And I think he handled himself very well, you know, stood tall, which is easier for him than others, but did his job as a spokesperson for the squad when we were at our crappiest. I've always liked him. But yeah, I mean, I just think maybe the stylistic differences he kind of sees over the last season or so, a bit of a, we like you, but we don't, but you're not the future kind of feeling from Arsenal. And he's looking at his moves, they're looking at their moves, and maybe something will happen. I guess I assumed it would be next summer, though. Seems too early for us to get into a goalkeeper thing in terms of a full-on swap. I assumed we were getting a backup goalkeeper who might challenge him next season, and he'd be fine with that because he was ready for a Bundesliga move or something.
Yeah. You know, the thing that's hard for me is that I really want to be excited about what we're going to do this summer. And so that starts by feeling good about the process. And, you know, reading what Gunnerblog wrote in The Athletic about, like, what we want to do with goalkeeper, for example, is they're saying the perception is that Arsenal don't want a number two, a clear backup. They want someone who will compete for the position. You know, two number ones competing for the position. And it's just like, is that a thing? I mean, I'm not saying that no number two has ever beaten out a number one, but like, is that a thing you want to be doing? Devoting resources to having two very good keepers, no real competitions to split it up, and having a keeper competition for the starting position? Like, that's not a thing that I'm familiar with clubs actively seeking to do. And I'm not sure I understand why you'd want to do that.
I'd like to interpret that as bringing in a new talent like Onana and saying, come in and compete with Leno. But in brackets, probably this is Leno's year and probably next year. But hey, go for it, man. Go for it.
Yeah, it's just like, I think with keeper, you want a guy who knows I'm the number one. I go out there, I play every game, and I'm going to, you know, I don't know that competition helps a keeper where that confidence that the gloves are yours is so important. And also that, you know, just the fact of how resources get allocated, your keeper is unlikely to miss time. So you don't need a great backup. Like if you have a 20 million pound keeper sitting on your bench who plays twice a season, you've misallocated resources. I kind of hope that's not the case. I hope that what we'll do is if it's Onana, fine, we go get him. Maybe Leno leaves after this next season. Leno starts when Onana is not available and we move on. But two of them seems like an overstretch. One thing that does look like decent process, Tim, I think we sort of screwed up with Nketiah. I think it's fair to say that yes. Arteta really, really, really likes the player, talked himself into the idea that he had a role for him. And then really when the season got sticky and things got pretty important, he didn't have a role for him. And I have some sympathy for Arteta because when you really like a player and you talk yourself into the idea that you'll find a role for him, but he's not quite good enough for you to find that role, that is tricky. He probably should have gone out on loan. He probably should have been sold the summer before, but now he has 1 year left on his deal and he's probably at the absolute lowest valuation he'll ever be because he did not play most of this season. It looks like, based on reporting, we are about to extend him, give him a new contract. Now, I think there are people that would look at that and say, my God, this club, like we just can't make a decision on anyone, can we? But I actually see this a different way, which is we extend him, we send him out on loan. Ideally, he thrives on loan, and then you can sell him having rehabilitated some of his value instead of leaving on a free. Because right now, if we don't extend him, it's sell at probably the bottom of his value or let him leave for free in a year. So do you think that this is sort of block and tackle stuff where we're probably doing the right thing, or does it concern you that maybe this is a sign that we're still not making decisions on players?
No, it does concern me. I mean, it concerns me certainly looking backwards. You know, I was saying in January, like absolutely sell him. I didn't see a role for him at all, particularly once Martinelli came back. And if anything, I'm surprised he played as much as he did, which was not very, very much. I just didn't see a role for him. I just didn't see why we were so keen to hold on to him when it looked like there was interest in him. And I just think January is a brilliant time to sell a good but not great striker, because there is a big market for a good but not great striker in January when clubs are looking at the table and going, shit, we don't want to get relegated. Lots of deals go down at that time of year. Liverpool have done a few of those. So I really didn't understand why we held on to what we were holding on to him for in the first place. So it does concern me. I guess with the striker situation, we just have to wait and see how it all shakes out and what happens with Lacazette, for example, because we had a big conversation, didn't we, on the last pod about that kind of backup striker position and how for a season at least, it's kind of difficult to sit. Like, we've got a very clear number one, and probably in Balogun, we've got a very clear number three, but that number two spot is less clear. And we spoke about Martinelli, but I suppose the other balls up in the air are, yeah, you can extend Nketiah a year and then try and sell him next summer, although we'll just be in the same position then. I think his value peaked in January when he scored a few goals in the Europa League and was a bit more involved when Martinelli wasn't fit. Or do we just keep Lacazette till the end of his contract? Because, in lieu of any half decent offers for him, and he might be prepared to do that because he'll probably get a better contract at the end of it and he can probably expect to play some minutes for Arsenal. So I get the sense there are some balls up in the air there. I still think just selling Nketiah, like Nketiah is not going to make it to the level that we want. Like, just sell. I don't think he would be, I don't think he'd accept a contract offer, and neither should he. I think he would probably say, no, I want to go. And if you can't get maximum value for you, well, too bad. That's your fucking fault for being so stupid. That's what I'd say if I were him. So I'd still absolutely sell. I don't understand. I understand why we didn't sell last summer, but definitely in January alone, at least, to build that value. I don't understand why you'd do that now and not January. And I'm really concerned that, first of all, Arteta thought that was necessary, and secondly, that Edu wasn't in his ear saying, no, we don't need this guy anymore. But just to finish on the Leno thing, by the way. I should just point out that, remember, Leno wasn't the first choice when we bought him. Petr Cech started ahead of him. So there is like a historical precedent for buying that first choice goalkeeper when you've ostensibly got a first choice goalkeeper, albeit it was an aging Petr Cech.
Mm. I mean, I guess some of this, though, is going to come down to Nketiah, right? Because if you're the player, you're 22, why would you sign a new deal to protect Arsenal's value, knowing you're either going to get loaned out and kick the can down the road on your career, or you're going to sit the bench most of the season with very limited opportunities to play when someone... I mean, look, you're an English player who thrived at the youth level. You've had some success at Arsenal. I think his skill set is known. Okay, his value is depressed, but that probably helps him negotiate for a bigger wage, frankly. So if you're the player, do you maybe have the power to decide how this turns out by not agreeing to the new deal?
And totally.
Because the one thing Arsenal can't do is lose Eddie Nketiah for free after all these years. You're going to have to recoup something.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if I were him, I wouldn't sign in a million years. I don't understand what would be in it for him to sign, particularly without... a Europa League group stage, which is exactly where he made his value last year. And, you know, I don't understand why we sent Joe Willock out. Well, no, I understand why we sent Joe Willock out on loan, but I look at that and I think, yeah, that's great, because we've either built the guy's value or we're getting back someone with more Premier League experience and goals, win-win. Why did we think that Eddie Nketiah sitting in a suit in the stand for 5 months was the way to go? I can't understand that. I just don't know what they were thinking, to be honest. And
wasn't the issue that, in part, Lacazette had not been in form in the first half of the season? Arteta was obviously fighting for his life at that point. And in terms of style, he still liked that central striker that he kind of grouped Laka and Eddie together. And he hadn't, you know, it's not like he had bedded in a new system that he could take to the bank. So, you know, he wanted the Laka. He wanted goals in the front three. We saw him playing Aubameyang from the left. So there's kind of a rationale for why he would keep Laka / Eddie. When Eddie played, it was in the first half of the season, even if not that much. So, like, I don't think, in hindsight, it was the wrong move for Eddie and probably the wrong move for us.
But also...
From where you are in January, I don't think... Like, if you want a bit of an insurance policy with Eddie, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world keeping him around, and you can still...
You'll be shocked to know I disagree, but go ahead, Tim.
No, I was going to say, Lacazette really came back into form in, like, New Year. And so by the end of January, I think it was absolutely abundantly clear. And there were, you know,
they're made in December. Hang on, let him.
I don't know. I do think these deals can be done pretty quickly. I think they tend to be in January. I think quite a lot you see clubs do that in January. Go, okay, let's see where we are, like January the 25th or something, and we can revive something. I don't know how true they were. There were a lot of reports that West Ham were interested, and Arsenal, like, publicly flattened that and said, nope, player not for sale. And I don't understand why you're that firm on a player who then didn't make the squad for 3 months. Like, and it's the squads are big now. It's not like you've got three subs. Like, you know, there's a lot of substitutes there, and he wasn't even getting on the bench. I just don't get it.
Clive, I want to get your take on this. And look, sometimes I think we tend to overanalyze stuff. Sometimes if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a fire-breathing dragon. But most of the time, it's a duck. And, like, Arteta loves Nketiah. Arteta talked himself into the idea that he would use Nketiah because he loves Nketiah. Arteta could not find a use for Nketiah. Like, I don't think it's super complex. And the one reason, in general, I think where you and I differ the most, I just think we are way too conservative as a club taking options that are like, this is just a safe, sound, like, it's great to have this backup. It's great to have this auxiliary plan in reserve. I think scrap that shit. Sell it all, take risk, collect money, move players on, find solutions if
probably
it comes to
not
it.
Not when you're about to get sacked, though.
Yeah, but I don't care about Arteta's job. I care about the club, right?
You know, who else might have got sacked? Edu.
Yeah, but isn't that the problem? So, like, so I want to bring Clive in, but to be fair, that is the problem, isn't it? I mean, Clive, ultimately, when a manager starts making personnel decisions that maybe aren't in the club's best interest because he's worried his job is on the line, in a really well-run club, someone might put a hand on his shoulder and say, you know what, this guy, we've got to move on. I'm sorry, you're going to have to make it work somehow else. But there isn't that hierarchy at the club. And so Nketiah got lost in the mix in a similar way that Nelson did, although the circumstances are different. But why don't you weigh in on Nketiah?
Could I add three words, which is that it was also in the club's best interest for neither of them to get sacked. So
That's like six podcasts. So we'll come to that later. But I do take your point. Clive, what do you think about it?
Yeah, I think a couple of things happened, really. I think West Ham were in for him. And again, if you believe the rumours, which I do, every one of them, the price we asked for was too high.
Did you see the title of our last podcast episode? All transfer rumours are true, just in case.
Yeah, I love transfer rumours, so it didn't bother me. And so the price we asked for was too high. And so I think West Ham, if I remember rightly, didn't they move on Sebastian Haller at Christmas to Ajax, wasn't it? I think it was Ajax. And basically, everyone thought it was going to come in and buy Nketiah, and it didn't really happen. But another thing happened. Martinelli tweaked his knee or ankle. Remember that one? Mm-hmm. When he tweaked his knee and ankle, and I think that maybe forced Arteta to freeze, unlike Arsenal, to freeze for a minute. And I think he realised, he actually said, I've let him down, I haven't found the minutes for him. Martelli's come back, starts hitting his straps, and we all know what happens then. I believe there was other loan offers. There were lots of loan offers. If you got a loan offer for a player, you just see one of your other young players go down. I will take what Paul said about Lacazette's form, but I can't quite remember that. He's gone ultra cautious. And now Martelli's flying. We're thinking, oh, mate, you should have got rid of him in January. You know, because you've just wasted 6 months of his life. The contract offer for me is about value protection.
Yeah.
When you get a contract offer, it doesn't mean that, you know, everyone's assuming he's getting double the wages, right? He could be getting £1 extra. And that could be just part of the HR process to offer you a contract. But that contract number tells you what the club thinks of you. And it could be a value protection thing. So let's see what happens. I think it would be good for him if he moved on. There are rumours of Watford. And that's a nice move for him. He hasn't got to even move house or anything like that. Just jumps over the hedge and away he goes back to training. So I think that would be a nice move for him. And he will play. He will play. And that's what he needs to do at this age. He needs to play. He's done well for Arsenal. He's done well for the youth. He's hit a bit of a wall. Go and play, son. Go and play in the Premier League and see what happens.
Yeah. I think in general, there's... Like, look, if you have unlimited resources, unlimited squad size, the idea of having a lot of good backup plans or players in reserve or players available to you if things don't go quite right makes a lot of sense. But I think when you are trying to rebuild and you have limited resources and you want to sort of maximize that for a longer term project like we are in, I think you have to be a little more decisive. And in general, I know I bang on about it, but I do think Arsenal struggle to be decisive. And I think... Obviously, a young manager going through challenges early in his career is going to struggle to be decisive, especially with players he really likes. I think a young director of football who doesn't have his feet under him necessarily yet and is more of an equal to the manager rather than a superior is going to defer to the manager's decision-making. I'm not saying it's a calamity.
Can we just agree that we lack decisiveness for probably about 3 to 5 years?
Absolutely. Probably.
Can we just agree
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
Because... there was a time when we would be moving players on and we'd all be crying because it's too soon. Now we move people on far too late. And then everything's clear about what we think about them because they've played their way out of the league group, which means they've played their way out of maximum potential value. So,
and I'd go the other direction to some extent, Clive, which is I've come around on this. I think selling too early is probably better than selling too late. Like,
Because if you're
getting a really good fee for... The odds are most players won't make it, won't turn out to be as good as you think. Like, we were sad to lose Alex Leb. We were kind of sad to lose Alex Song. We were sad to lose Alex Iwobi. All of the Alexes left. We had no Alexes. Our Alexes were taken from us. Hell, Alexis left. And none of them were any good anywhere. The Alexis, Alex, they were all bad. Kleb was terrible. Song was terrible. Iwobi has been pretty terrible, I hate to say it. And Alexis was done, dusted, and terrible. So, like, I'm not saying you have to sell an Eddie. But if the Alexes have taught us anything, it's at a minimum sell them if their name is Alex, but probably sell them, period. Clive,
can I say one last thing?
Please.
On this one? Just one last thing.
Can it be in the form of a ridiculous thing like I just did, or is it going to be more legitimate?
No, it'd be half sensible. Okay. It's just basically there's a criteria. I mean, you guys have taught me this. There's a criteria for selling players. We've got a homegrown player that's in his early 20s, that's got X amount of minutes in the Premier League, X amount of goals in European competitions, got European experience. CV doesn't look too bad. Do you see what I mean? Mm. If he has a bit of extra length for his contract, then he's gonna get sold at a decent number. That's what should happen.
Yes.
And, you know, he's done the work. He's built up his CV. So we should get paid. Right? Well, let's watch this space.
Well, the other thing that I think we look at from a process standpoint, besides decisiveness, is cohesiveness. Does the plan make sense? So, Clive, let me just ask you this. We're linked with Lokonga now. We're linked with Tyler Adams. We're linked with Neves. We're linked with Bissouma. The problem with links is that two of those could be wrong and two of them could be right. All of them could be right. All of them could be wrong. It's not so much that I hate any of those links. Obviously, some I like more than others. It's that I don't see any of them as being the same thing. Now, to be fair, the Adams link is probably at right back. So let's set that aside. But, like, if you want Ruben Neves or Bissouma, I would say to you, you're looking at two different things. If you want Lokonga, you're looking at a third different thing. So, Clive, how do you parse rumors that make it seem like we're targeting the right area of the pitch, but don't have a clear sense of the qualities we want from the players we're targeting?
I'm trying to get myself to care a bit less, because Lokonga, I did not know existed 3 weeks ago.
I think caring a bit less about Arsenal would be a really safe thing to do. I just find it difficult.
And, you know, I get fixated on people, just like most people do. And in the Premier League, I look at what we need to have, and I think, oh, Bissouma's the best option. And I decide. And then I see a video of Lokonga, and then I think, crikey, that's a different way to go about it. And then I see a video of Ruben Neves spraying the ball to all sides of the pitch. I think, well, that's an interesting way to go. Then I see Tyler Adams sprinting into collisions all over the pitch. I'm thinking, crikey, you're good.
Maybe Stan Kroenke would start paying attention to the club if an American played for it.
Yeah, well, I know about him, but now I've had a close look at him. My goodness, he's good. Suddenly he puts all the Max Aaronses into your back pocket. The other day I was talking about Zeki Celik playing at right back. He looks sensible and good, got connections with Lille, the link there, and how he can play against Pepe. I love them all. I love them all. And let's see, but to have a look at them and then try to look at the... I'll tell you why I like them. I like how they play. They're forward-thinking, bombastic pressers, move, mobile. I like them all. They all bring something that we haven't got, you know, and that's what excites you about. When I see people that don't bring anything new, then I think, are we getting this right? You know, so I really like these links. I just hope a few of them are true, you know what I mean, and we choose the right ones. I've weaned myself back off Buendia, thinking, okay, there are other 10s out there. There are other players. Who's the one we spoke about this morning, Tim, that we spoke, is that Leon, the Brazilian
Lucas,
guy?
Lucas Paquetá.
Yeah. Now, again, a week ago, knew nothing about him. He scored a goal for Brazil last night. Well, let me check him out again. Looks absolutely a dream of a player, right? And so don't do this. There's so much talent out there, so much talent. And so don't worry about the process. Worry about what happens. Then we talk about the process when they arrive and they put the shirt on and stand against that white wall with the red letters. Then we can say, okay, what are we trying to do? I think what's really clear, we must have a clear idea of our process once they've signed. And then say, what are we trying to do here? What are we trying to do? If that's not clear, Elliot, I'll let you loose. You can say what you like.
Yeah, I think it's impossible to map
Paul? Yeah, go ahead.
Process to rumors. I mean,
that is true. Because, for example, let's say the Bissouma rumor is true and all the other ones are false. Well, then you've just decided that our process doesn't make sense based on three untruths and what, right? I totally agree. I think, first of all, I do want to give some credit to the journalists who work hard at this. There's a perception that all transfer rumors are false and no transfer rumors are true. And I think that's a discredit to the people that do have sources and connections.
but also the club could be briefing for all kinds of reasons. So I absolutely agree with you. But Paul, I mean, do you think that there is, because, you know, I look at the links all over, like the links that we can probably agree on is it seems pretty clear Aouar, Buendia, and Odegaard were on the radar. I don't think you'd regard them as total, you know, same
analogs.
Thank you for words talking in the microphone. Do you?
No, I think they're all three are quite different. but I'm not sure there's anything to Aouar. You know, here's how I stretch a tent over that camel, which is we're clearly interested in Odegaard. We know what he is. We're not sure where that's at. We could be left with nothing. So we want to keep our Buendia could make something work, different kind of player, but brings us something in the 10 spot with the additional goals, but maybe not a cerebral. We want to keep interested. So we get involved in the bidding process. It gets really serious. We're not ready because we're still kind of hooked on Odegaard. We were hoping that would be kicked down the road to just after the Euros where we know if we have Odegaard. And Aouar is the rumors from last year, and you know, maybe in a fire sale, and no, are we interested? Kinda. Are we interested in Bissouma? Sure, we are. Do we really think he's coming here, and we'll spend the money they're looking for? And is he the perfect fit? No, but we'll probably take him if the price is great. It's later on in the window, and the style of player we're looking for, which I would guess at the moment is more Neves, Calvin Phillips, Declan Rice-ish, i.e. Neves. Now, there's differences in those players, but there's a commonality in how those guys play. And I mentioned the other two, just kind of that's how I view Neves, maybe a less athletic version of those two guys, but basically doing the same thing for their team. I think we're looking for Neves. Would we cry in our beer if we couldn't get the Neves we want and Yves Bissouma was actually available later on in the summer? I'm sure we'd say, ooh, good price, great player, we can make this work.
Mm. I mean, Tim, do you have a strong feeling about this? It is so dangerous to take cues about your club from rumors, but we also have past issues with the club not necessarily looking like they were completely in alignment on what the plan was. So I would certainly say if you have misgivings or if you have concerns, it's not unwarranted, but basing it off rumors is tricky. Do you get a sense? I mean, Lukonga, Bissouma, Neves, like I could talk myself in any, Tyler Adams. I could talk myself in any of these targets. I'm not saying they blow my hair back, but you know, I don't know that any of them are bad players. And I think in a couple of those cases, I'd be pretty excited, but does the lack of a cohesiveness about that concern you in any respect? Do you have any concern that the plan doesn't look like it's targeting any one particular type of skills?
Not really, just because there's for everything we do know, and we do know a lot thanks to some of the journalists you referenced, like it's not very often that Arsenal sign someone and you don't know about it, like give or take a Matt Ryan on loan. Usually you know about it weeks before it's signed, sealed and delivered. But there, you know, there is the kind of, you know, the rumor mill and how much of it is true and how much of it is agent talk and things like that. I mean, really, the simple answer is wait and see at the end of the window how it all shakes out, and you can go from there. But I'd say, like in terms of targeting different types of player, that doesn't concern me quite as much, just because again, like there might be a couple of different ways that Arsenal are willing to go on a player. You know, there might be like a plan A and a plan B. And also you can never really tell exactly how a team is going to utilize a player when they sign them. Like nobody can tell me when Liverpool signed Gini Wijnaldum, they were thinking, yeah, we'll get this guy because he's really good at predicting where clearances will land, and he's really good at helping Liverpool to keep teams under pressure. Like no one thought that when they signed him, and when Liverpool signed Mane, I'm sure a lot of people, myself included, thought, yeah, he looked quite an interesting player. Not sure he's worth 32 million, and then after a season, it's like, yeah, he's probably worth triple that because of the way they used him. So, like, we can take good guesses at these things. For me, it's, I think it's more your former point there, which is just, we don't really trust Arsenal. If we trusted them more, I don't think we'd look in. And the thing is, we're looking for reasons to trust them, right? So that makes you go a little bit deeper on things. It reminds me a little bit about when a lot of Arsenal fans, and I understand this, talk about, you know, improved communication from the club and things like that. And actually, what improved communication is, tell me some lies. Tell me some really flattering lies, because I can see what's happening and it's a bit crap. So please tell me that what I'm seeing is wrong. And actually, the truth is, nope, what you're seeing is the truth. And you kind of just want to be lied to a little bit. And that's, I think that's what we're doing here. There is just a mistrust. And I think it is worth reflecting on. And like, don't get me wrong, that mistrust is not misplaced at all. But I do also think it's worth reflecting on some of the good stuff we've done in the market over the last couple of years. The likes of Tierney, like Tierney's a steal at 25 million now, even with his fitness problems. Martinelli, you know, there has been some good work done there. So I don't worry about it as much. But then again, to be honest, I don't really zoom in on the minutiae until it's all done. I'm not into the transfer rumours personally. I like the beginning bit, which is now the drawing board. I like trying to guess where we might go and how we might get there. And then I like the end bit when I go, okay, this is what we've got. How's this all going to fit together? The middle bit, personally, I just don't get as invested in it.
Yeah, and you're not into transfer rumors, and I think it's fair to say then, you know, to everybody listening, you can mute Tim's account until about September, maybe mid-August. you know, you could block him on Twitter until then. Yeah, look, the rumors are challenging because if you invest a lot in the veracity of the rumors, you are going to come away with one very, very strong opinion about the club that may not be backed by any facts. I think we've struggled because we've been in a lot of these situations, the Saliba situation, the Ozil situation, the Guendouzi situation. You know, all of these situations where there have been rumors behind the scenes of issues that we don't know if they exist or not, where we don't know the real reasons for things happening. And so then we have to draw our conclusions based on which rumor or which presumption we put weight in, which is why you see a lot of polarization in the fan base, because you can decide to believe one side of the story and come away with a very different conclusion on a lot of these issues than the other side. If you believe that Guendouzi is an unmanageable prick, you know, you're going to come away with one theory. If you want to, you know, take the perspective that we have a manager who's, you know, an egotistical, self-centered guy who wants everyone to just listen to him and he's a tyrant and he's pushing players away, you're going to come away with a very different perspective. Usually the truth lies somewhere in the middle, but with transfer rumors, it probably is easier to just wait and see what happens and then evaluate how sharp we were based on what we actually got done. Let's do this. Let's shift gears to the Euros. And you know, before we do that, we'll take a quick break to hear about Indeed. If you're hiring, you're going to want to know about that. And if you're hiring, hopefully it is not for a new podcast host for this particular podcast. That doesn't need to happen, despite the fact that I seem to have lost all of my words today. So we'll take a quick break. We'll come back with Euros coverage after this. Stay with us. Okay, it's time to tell you about Indeed. If you need to hire right now, it's a perfect time. There's so much talent out there. Maybe you want to hire for a podcast host. Maybe you're a podcast that people love, but they don't like the host so much. Well, Indeed can help you find that, but please not that. Use it for something else. Indeed is the job site that makes hiring as easy as 1, 2, 3. Post, screen, and interview. All on Indeed. Get your quality shortlist of candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description faster. Only pay for the candidates that meet must-have qualifications and schedule and complete video interviews in your Indeed dashboard. Indeed makes connecting with and hiring the right talent fast and easy. With tools like Indeed Instant Match, giving you quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your job description immediately, and Indeed skill tests that on average reduces hiring time by 27%. You can choose from more than 130 skills tests. Then add your must-have requirements so you only pay for the applications that meet them. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined. If you're hiring, you need Indeed. Get started right now with a free $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through June 30th. Terms and conditions apply. Go there now. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Okay, we're back. Let's talk Euros for a little bit. We did the full Euros preview yesterday, so if you want like every group, game by game, team by team, player by player, we can do that. I think what we should do today is just focus on a couple exciting ones, and we'll start with England for obvious reasons. Clive, I have struggled to really love international football, but when the big tournaments come around, I enjoy them because they're a respite from transfer rumors, they're a respite from being so fixated on Arsenal that you start to lose the forest through the trees, and it's some football to watch to get you through the summer. This tournament, which I think is kind of funny that it's named Euro 2020, like it's not 2020. I get why you're calling it that. Just call it Euro 2021, but whatever, is an interesting one because I'm not sure there's been a more fun England team in a long time in some ways. If you can put your thumb over the screen to cover the part of the pitch that Harry Kane is on, there's going to be a lot of fun players to watch. So do you find yourself really enticed by this England team, and in particular, just an extraordinarily dynamic group of young players from Sancho to Mount to Saka to, I guess, Sterling's not particularly young anymore, Jude Bellingham, Phil Foden. I mean, it's an exciting cadre of young, talented players.
Yeah, well, I think this is actually quite a deep topic. And when I get on the Euros, maybe I'll go into it a little bit more. But I think what England have done and English football has done over the last 10 years or so with its academy system and what it's done at youth levels, we're starting to see it now in the first team. And I think it was it Greg Dyke that said the plan was to win the World Cup by 2022? Well, we can see these players, and we're all playing fantasy football, aren't we, with some of them, particularly at the top end of the pitch. And I have concerns if we're relying on Harry Maguire, but that's where we are. And to be honest, when he was not in the Manchester United team, they look like half a team. So, and so we're starting to see the fruits of his labours. And Southgate has been there right from the start with the FA DNA, working with Dan Ashworth and putting in the EPP and all of these things. And he's gone through the levels, and here he is with the first team. And the interesting thing is, post-Russia, we had this team of young, diverse players playing that actually surprised us. And we completely united the nation, and it was just fantastic. And all the football matches were great, not just the England games. There were so many high-quality games of really high-wire football. And now what we've got now is a slightly different situation. The world's in a different place post-pandemic. Lots of division, based on, you know, racial division, let's be honest, lots of racial division. And suddenly we have this international football team that not only got to reach our expectations on the pitch, but also been given a sizable task to try to unite the fan base that are really pretty polarised in some major, major societal topics. And so I think it's going to be a challenge for England. I really do. If they can overcome some of the challenges and some of these softer challenges, this could be something really memorable. I think from a football perspective, there's a few gaps there. And I think there's a few expectations I think Southgate may struggle with, because rather than just being a unifying figure that's unbelievably emotionally intelligent, that can bring a set of people together, make England a different team to support. There was a period in my youth you couldn't support England. It was too nationalistic. And he's opened that team up to so many people. And so I'm fully behind what he's trying to do. But when it comes down to it, back to what we do on this podcast, if you make the wrong substitution at the wrong time, you're going to get it, mate. And with that talent, I think he's got a lot of expectations on him, you know, to find the right team, to find the right system, to get all everybody's favourites in. It's going to be tough. And following on from Russia, where they got to the semis, it's semis or bust, right? Mm. And I'm sure you guys know the second round is going to be, you know, post the group of death. It's going to be very difficult to get past. So one to watch, but I'm excited. A little bit nervous and cautious about some of the things that could happen around the game, which I find a little bit concerning and disappointing. But hey, I'll stop there.
Yeah, I think the thing that sucks for England is they could be really good and draw Germany in the first knockout round and go out, and people will say it's a catastrophe, when really it's just unlucky, because you're going to get that second place team from the Germany, Portugal, France group, and any one of those teams can beat England. That game could be a final, right? That game is going to be at the level that you're going you're going to have a team in it that would have every right to say they belong in the final. So that's the shame of it. And Tim, I think where I can see this heading is Southgate has the unenviable situation where he's got so much exciting, precocious young talent, but a lot of it is all in the same positions. And yep. So, you know, if Rashford plays and England play poorly, it'll be why didn't Foden play? And if Sancho plays and England play poorly, it'll be why didn't Saka play or, you know, Sterling play? I mean, in any given game, Saka's going to be on the bench, Foden's going to be on the bench, Sterling's going to be on the bench, or Sancho's going to be on the bench, and Rashford's going to be on the bench. It is, and it sets up, in my view, you can already see the articles, you know.
Yeah.
Isolated Foden cuts a sad figure as England crash out. Like, it's going to be whichever talented young player doesn't pick. So, in your view, is there a right way for Southgate to approach that part of it? Because obviously getting that part right, I think, is the whole ball of wax. I mean, balancing some experience, which he has in, you know, some in midfield, some in defense, and obviously with Harry Kane, balancing that part with getting the right combination of those exciting young players.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And that's what I'm not looking forward to, that exactly what you said. If and when England don't win, it will be because of the players they left out. And people have just got to get their head around the fact that in the attacking areas, this is a really deep squad and some good players are going to have to be left out. And really what the manager has to do is tune out some of that noise and just go for balance. Because we've seen this with, also the other thing is international football is different. It is not as attacking as club football because you just haven't got the time to get players together. And one of the unfortunate positions Southgate is in is he's pretty much always played Sterling and Rashford as those wide players and they've both lost form. And so he's got Grealish and Foden. I don't think you can play Grealish and Foden, and what a choice that is. And he's got Sancho, and it's a bit like those are the form players, but they haven't, well, Foden started the last couple of England games, but that really changes your setup. And do you do that on the eve of a tournament, or do you back the guys who are much more integrated into the team, probably mesh better with Kane, and hope that that gets you through? So it's going to be difficult from that point of view. It's also difficult because England are weak at the back and will probably have to go with a back three to cover that. And that takes an attacking player out. I think, like, if you look at this tournament, there are a lot of teams that are going with a back three for those reasons, because they, you know, they can't do that kind of high pressing, get high up the pitch. They don't have the time with the players to implement that. And I think there's just the perception issue a lot of people have, where they don't quite understand that international teams are their own teams. And it's not like you don't just put the 11 best players in. It's not like player of the month. You don't hand it out as an award or a pat on the back for someone for playing well. So there's all of these factors. And I think the fear I have is that I just don't think Southgate has quite decided on quite a few things. And honestly, I think with international football, you've got to be bloody minded. You watch that France team, right? And you look at the names in the France team. It's like, wow, what a team.
Look at the names that aren't in the France team.
Well, yeah, yeah. But have you ever watched them? They are so boring.
Yeah.
They are so unbelievable. There aren't really many exciting national teams, because you can't be exciting, because that's just not how it works. So on one hand, Southgate's got to tune out some of that noise. But I do think sometimes too much choice is a bad thing. And sometimes you've just got to go, no, this is my team. I don't care if you whinge that Rice and Henderson are my defensive midfielders and I've got three at the back. And that means I have to leave. Like, that's our best chance of winning the tournament by doing that. And the problem is England probably won't win the tournament because there are lots of strong teams. So it's just one of those things, particularly with England, when you get the ball of analysis becomes so much bigger because everyone's involved. It's not just like your club's fans. Like, how fucking exhausting are we as Arsenal fans after games when you've got the whole country doing that? And then you've got like, more casual kind of coverage and more casual fans thrown into that. And, you know, you hear all this like, well, he's got to start Grealish. And it's like, okay, fine. So who does he take out? Make that decision. But there's going to be all of that, and that, to be honest, I'm I wish I could tune that out, and I'm going to try really, really hard.
Yeah, I think one fun exercise is just try ranking these players. Forget even positions. I mean, Paul, if you had to sort of loosely rank and I don't know if Sterling can be put into this group, but I mean, Sterling, Rashford, Sancho, Saka, Bellingham, Grealish, Foden. Do you have sort of a rank in your mind of, again, not positionally, not like who should be playing above, but just where these players are? Do you have any sense of, like, they're all excellent, but most to least, in just in terms of where they are in their career at this very moment? Did we lose Paul? We may have.
So,
I know.
I'm here. Sorry,
I just had a mute issue. No problem.
Run through the names again while I
if you want to just do the forward ones, we can simplify it that way and say, like, Foden, Sancho, Sterling, Rashford, Saka. Like, if you wanted to organize that group just into a currently where they are right now, and I'm going to say best to worst, but you know what I mean. There is no worst, but best to least best right now.
Well, and Mount is a factor,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, Mount, sorry. Yep, Mount's in that group. Yeah, well, I mean, he could play off the left, I guess.
Yeah, I think Foden and Mount are at the moment right at the top. And of course, we have a slightly different visibility on Sancho, but he's had a great season.
See, I'd have him at the absolute top of the whole thing.
Yeah.
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 I think he's that good, yeah.
And I think, like, those are the three, but whether you're playing those, you're already in trouble at that point, right? I think those
because then you got to get Grealish in there somewhere, and Mount's probably playing, there's a similar role there, so.
And Rashford is a force, right? And he's a force for England. And United came second, but it wasn't always great football. And how, exactly how good was Rashford's form? It was goodish. It'd be a hell of a job.
Yeah.
That's not even worrying about who plays where, but
the obvious thing is drop Kane, right? That's the obvious one. Hey, you have to go, don't you?
I do, yeah.
Okay, pause on Twitter, pause my pants. Thanks, pause.
Woohoo!
Clive, that group, I mean, how do you have it? And if you want to expand it out, I mean, Mount, Grealish, Bellingham, Foden. I mean, it's an incredible group. Would you disagree with me? I have Sancho at the absolute top. I think he is one little half cut above any of them.
Yeah, I disagree. I think he could be if he is used correctly. And what we do, because we've got so many good left-siders, we put him on the right. And I actually think he's more of a 10 or off the left. And when he's coming up for the youth ranks, he's always left. It's him and Hudson-Odoi from the left. And he plays on the right, and obviously he can do it. But trust me, coming on his right foot, going towards goal, he's a different animal, and he can stop and start you, in an instant. I think back to Arsenal, we had the discussions, didn't we? With our two creators, two runners. And England need to make sure with Harry Kane, who is not a runner, we need to make sure we have one person around him that can run through lines. Otherwise, we're going to have a situation where we've got nobody in the box. Harry Kane's got this thing at the moment where he thinks he's almost playing for himself. Brand Kane, and I can do exactly what I like. I can play DM, I can play centre mid, I can drop in here, I can drop in there, which is all great for your brand, Harry, but you're the centre forward. And without people who can run past him, this isn't Tottenham. You need to make sure that you stay in the right places. So that would be my message to him. Southgate seems to like Sterling. I like Sterling a lot. I think his form is not quite as good as Rashford's, funny enough, which I think in the last game he showed flickers of his form coming back. He's been carrying injury all season, so I'm not sure where he is, but he has dedicated himself to this tournament. He's due an operation. He's going to play. So I think he may start with Kane, Rashford, and I think the golden boy is Foden, who I think he's best suited from the right. Now, the problem is now everyone wants to see Grealish in there. They want to see Mount in there. If England play 3-4-3, I don't know how they're going to fit those guys in. I really don't. Somebody will go, but he'll definitely have a sprinter. Grealish is really showing his hand, but there could be up to 5, 6, 7 games, and there are 5 substitutes. So I stress little about this, actually. Just make sure we have a runner that can run through people, keep people pressing, going backwards. The hope of speed is really important. And in some ways, I've got this little thing that I think Kane is a problem for Grealish. I think they're both sort of, they're not super fast, and Grealish is fast with the ball, and they sort of play in similar areas. They want to dictate. They want to drop. Want to dictate. So although Grealish has done fantastically well, and he's obviously got the personality to play international football, I think Kane's a problem for him. I do think that, and I think Foden and Mount may get the heads up for the first game with a sprinter around, and and that works for me. And see how we go.
Yeah, gosh, it's difficult. It's the good kind of difficult, but it is difficult. And for the first time, I think England, not the first time ever, but you know, England are experiencing some of what maybe like a France deals with when people say, "How are you leaving that guy out?" It is a little bit tricky. I mean, Tim, we'll move off England and finish up with just a couple of the other sort of big, exciting teams that are in the tournament. But do you have a feeling about that group? I mean, in terms of liking England, I realize it's not a heavy Arsenal presence, but whether it's Bellingham and Mount and Grealish in sort of a midfield area, or it's Foden and Sancho and Sterling and Rashford, a little older, obviously, but Saka, it's a group that I feel like is easy to be excited about because they're young and dynamic and really very good. I mean, does that give you a little jolt to want to watch more? Because I think in the past, whatever you could say about England, I don't know if the talent has been, there's a lot of sauce in this side, for lack of a better way to put it.
And they're quite untainted. So it's not, it's not the kind of, oh God, it's John Terry and, you know, Ashley
Lampard
Cole.
Lampard and Gerrard.
And Rooney. And, you know, you look at like the United presence in there is Harry Maguire and Marcus Rashford. And I don't think, and look, maybe that's a little bit of a symbol of us kind of Arsenal not being that competitive anymore. But
maybe it's also because they're young and we haven't had the chance to think of them that way yet.
And they haven't really, well, some of them, most of them have only really done one international tournament, and that was a World Cup semi-final. So they're not that tainted a group in that respect. And look, maybe I think what Clive said earlier about Southgate kind of opening the England team back up to people is quite right. And maybe we're just getting like a different type of footballer. Maybe it's just like a bit random, but, you know, you're getting like people like Marcus Rashford, who are like positive role models, and for want of a better phrase, and someone like Raheem Sterling, who's a guy a lot of people root for because they can see the way he was treated by, you know, the right wing tabloids and everything like that. And also I get the sense that there's quite a good spread of club representation here as well. So you know, there's players from Everton and Aston Villa and things like that. So it's, I guess it's by accident or design, it's been slightly kind of detoxified. So yeah, absolutely. And also there are fewer Spurs players.
And you know what? Like, City players don't offend me in the same way.
No,
that, like,
I don't care about Man City at all.
And you've got a couple from Dortmund. You've got one from Arsenal. You know, Sancho's Dortmund, Bellingham's Dortmund, Grealish's Villa for now anyway. Saka's Arsenal, thankfully. Rashford is likable, mostly because of off-pitch stuff. So, you know, other than Kane, who I just can't stand, and the irony is, I'm talking about all these exciting, big, talented players that England have, and the irony is, Kane might be the best of all of them, it pains me to say it, but I just hate him so much, I don't want to think about it. Like, I literally want to put my thumb over that part of the screen when I watch England, because then I think it'd be more enjoyable. But Clive, I mean, when you look at what England face, there are some really exciting, good teams in this tournament. Belgium certainly at the tail end of their golden generation, but the ones you're going to be looking out for are Portugal, Germany, and France, because one of those teams has a date with England, assuming England tops their group. Now, England may not top their group, but any of those teams can be a match for England. Is there one that you'd be more inclined to say that's the one I'd take if I had to?
Yeah, all three of them are pretty average. Don't win many major tournaments between them. I mean,
you've got the reigning Euro champions. You've got like eight-time World Cup champion, whatever the hell Germany is, and the reigning world champions in France. Pretty decent.
Just when you thought Germany were rubbish, they won one of their friendly seven the other day, and I watched the game. I thought, bloody hell, you're rolling into form.
Well, you know what's going to happen, right? Havertz and Werner all of a sudden are going to turn up back to their Bundesliga form for no reason.
It's actually quite interesting watching these games, because I'm starting to learn more players from more parts of the world. And so I can see him more and I can scout him and do what I like doing. And so, you know, I think Portugal is an untapped country, really, when it comes to talent. They seem to land in the Premier League and do quite well. They seem to cope, you know, quite quickly. So they're ones to watch. I watch, it is a bit Ronaldo-centric when you watch them. You know, everything goes to him and he's shooting, a bit like Kane. He's shooting, doesn't even look over his shoulder. Doesn't put his hand up and say, sorry, I'm shooting, that's it. So that's going to be interesting to see how they develop past Ronaldo going forward. Because so much young talent, so much young, bright talent that can really play both sides of the ball. I mean, goodness. France are just messing about, really. They literally are messing about. And in some ways, I think they're stronger when they won the World Cup. And I think they're more sure themselves. Positionally, they brought Benzema in. So the one weakness they had was potentially a centre forward, even though he scores lots of goals. They brought in a guy that's absolutely smooth as silk to play
centre forward. And Mbappe's gone up to another level too now. I mean, that's a big difference.
Yeah, and he's just sitting there waiting to just cut you straight in your throat. The moment you look the wrong direction, he's just gone straight past you. So Pogba looks completely at home in almost the Bruno Fernandes role. You know, he's allowed to just get on the ball. Whereas at Manchester United, he's got to be more deferent. So he's a totally different player.
Kante's
doing all right. He could do with being a bit more mobile, if you can ask me. But apart from that, he's not bad. And so, yeah, it's and Germany are finding a new young set of players, you know, alongside their older players. But, you know, they've still got Gnabry, the Havertz, obviously, and Werner. Post the Champions League final will be boosted confidence. Some of their central defenders, I'm not so sure about them. But yeah, they are still Germany, right? So England have got a massive game if they get through, which we hope they will. And I would not be able to call it. I couldn't call it. No chance. And this is why I think he's got such a challenging time for Southgate, because there's lots of expectation on him. And I think it's almost like, what's the degrees of failure? It's a terrible thing to say. I think success will purely be in the result, absolutely in the result. Just be, and I'm afraid he may not be able to please everybody. In fact, I know he won't. He will absolutely not be able to please us all unless the results are right. So good luck to him.
I remember many years ago, Tim, Thomas Rosicki signs for Arsenal, goes to the World Cup, scores from 25 yards out against the United States to put a dagger in the hearts of American fans. I'm going to throw you a scenario. First round of the knockouts, England draw Portugal, who finished second in their group. Ruben Neves, 25-yard screamer, game ends, England are out, Arsenal announces his signing. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I'd be excited because, like, as soon as England go out, I kind of, you know, I put it all
put
back,
Arsenal
on,
hat back on
the shelf. Yeah. Yeah, no, that, you know, that'd be kind of, that'd be, yeah, I'd get over it, put it that way.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is a group that will be must-watch every time it's on. Is one of those teams head and shoulders above for you? Is it France, or are we maybe underrating Portugal and Germany? I mean, there's enough talent in any one of those teams, in my view, to win the whole tournament.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think Portugal are really strong as well. And I think Portugal looks stronger than Belgium, because Belgium, a bit like England, not so great at the back. Whereas I look at Portugal and they're strong all the way through the team, same as France. Germany is such a weird one because their squad is so, so good. Like, their midfield three is unreal. They've been playing Kimmich as a number six, but they've decided, I think, and this is all part of the dysfunction under Jogi Löw, who really should have gone years ago now. But they've put him back to right back, I think, so that they can get Toni Kroos and Gundogan into midfield. I mean, that's not bad either. And like, Müller doesn't even start. Like, their squad is absolutely unreal, but I just can't see them doing anything. In fact,
no one talks about Gundogan, who was sensational for City this season. You know, and Gnabry and Müller and Hertz, Havertz and Werner and Kimmich. It's insane.
But they're kind of similar to Chelsea in that they haven't really got that centre forward. They've been playing Gnabry in a very free role, like almost like a false nine role, and he has been the only real success. Like, Love tried to move on from the 2014 team. He tried to leave Hummels and Boateng and Müller out, and that didn't really work. But Gnabry and Kimmich are the two players who really kind of took control of the team a little bit. But yeah, a bit like Chelsea. I mean, they literally have Havertz and Werner, but they don't have that kind of, they don't have a Lukaku or a Kane or an Mbappe really up front. And they're just, I mean, they lost to North Macedonia recently. Like, they're just, I think they could be like the disaster of the tournament. Like, that they might go through as one of the best third place teams in that group. But honestly, I could see them repeating their World Cup and going out. Portugal and France, I think, look really, really strong. The other team, I think, look really strong that maybe some people are sleeping on is Italy, who had a perfect record in qualification. And they've done, again, they probably lack a brilliant striker, but they've got some real talent in midfield as well. They've got some doubts over Verratti, but if they don't have Verratti, they just slot Jorginho in, who does a lot of the same things. So it's not an absolutely enormous loss. They look really, really strong, Italy. I think the winners will come from one of those three teams, France, Portugal, or Italy.
You want to talk midfield, by the way. Spare a thought for Croatia's midfield, which is absolutely incredible, and still has Luka Modric playing at an incredibly high level. Clive, could you make an argument back to front if you wanted to say strength at every position? Could you make an argument for Portugal being the best team in the tournament in terms of 1-11? Because, I mean, Cancelo, Ruben Dias, they're pretty good. Pepe's still playing at an enormously high level. In midfield, I mean, they can get all kinds of talent in there, from Andre Silva, Moutinho, Ruben Neves, Carvalho. They have Bruno Fernandes, and if they want, they have the new Bruno Fernandes and Goncalves. You know, up front, they have a guy named Cristiano Ronaldo, and on either side of him, Bernardo Silva and Diogo Jota. It's pretty scary. I mean, that's a team you could talk about as being maybe if not the best at every position, but just in terms of no real weak point, are they being overlooked? I mean, it's hard to say overlooked. They won the last Euros, you know, but it was 5 years ago
champions.
Now.
And yeah. Champions. And, you missed out Joao Felix, right? So I think,
that's right. Mm-hmm.
And he's not bad.
So he scores a billion. Yeah,
mm-hmm. They've got a strong squad. I think the weak point really is who they put next to Diaz. They use Jose Font or Pepe, and they're both 106.
Yeah, but Pepe was pretty good this season still, right? Like, he was still
I don't
good.
Care.
Okay.
I don't
just
care.
Just too old.
Right? So it's just a weak point. It doesn't mean they're going to not play very well. It just means that, you know, Fonte won the league with Lille, right? And he's one of the major players there. But I'm not saying they're bad players. I'm just saying if you're looking for a weakness, he's probably there and potentially left back. I watched them last night. They played a young kid there called Mendes, I think his name is. He looked great, by the way. I was looking at him for Arsenal. But he's
right,
18.
Right back, they're okay, I'd say.
Yeah, right back, they're fine. He's 18. I looked at him and thought, crikey, you look good for 18. But he's 18. I'm not sure he's going to be their first pick. They've got Guerrero, I think, that plays out there. So they've got some nice players, but like, just much like England, it's about getting the balance right. And when Tim was talking about Germany there, you know, he's absolutely right about Kimmich, and you got Goretzka can't get in that team, right? So, and he's a major player for Bayern Munich. So it's a bit of fantasy football. It is a bit, what do you do under pressure, these international games? Because there's a different pressure, not so much on the pitch, but the reaction to events. And that does affect you when you're put in the hot seat, per se. So, I don't worry. You know, I look at it and I can't wait to see it. But I've looked at France, I've looked at Portugal in the recent games, and they look comfortable in their own skin. They really do. So it's difficult to see past those.
Yeah, you have
I did hear today, sorry, one last thing. I did hear today, I don't know if it's true, I heard when Tim was talking about Italy midfield, I think I heard Locatelli got injured today.
Well, that's a shame.
In training and taking a set piece, and he could be in doubt for the tournament, which would be a real shame if that's true. But he just goes to show you, that's another thing to watch out for, his injury. A lot of these players had a rough time in a post-COVID world, so let's see how they'll hold up.
Yeah, well, that would be a shame, because he is really a special player. Who do you have winning it all? Give me two teams.
I've got to say France. I can't see past France or Portugal. That's my two teams.
And they're in the same group. It's crazy because one of them is going to probably face England. And yeah, I can't get over that. That's a shame, but also very, very fun. Tim, who you got?
Yeah, I mean, I could see a France-Portugal final, but for the sake of difference, I'm going to say Italy. I've just got a good feeling for them. And I think that people have slept on them a bit. I think also, I think experience, you know, I've always said that I think experience is the most overrated attribute in football. I don't think that at international level, and they've got Chiellini and Bonucci at centre half, not young by any means, but both brilliant, and Italy play in a way like when Belgium's centre backs are around about the same age, but Belgium try and play quite high up. Italy don't. And I really think that those two in defence, I think defences win you international tournaments. And yeah, I just fancy those two centre backs to be really, really tough to beat.
I think a reason people sleep on them too is Serie A has really fallen off. And I don't think people watch it as closely as they may have once upon a time. Yeah. And so players that are excelling in Serie A, I think either people aren't as aware of them or just assume it's because the league has gone down. So that'll be an interesting thing to watch for.
And Italy haven't done anything for ages as well. It's just the last couple of years they've got really good. And they got Mancini in, who, again, like international, you know, it's a slightly lower, like you've got Roberto Martinez managing Belgium. Like you've got some managers who've gone to the international game to try and rebuild their coaching reputations. And Italy have got Mancini, who perhaps not quite at the absolute elite club level where he has managed, but he's kind of better than international level. So I think that's quite an interesting dynamic as well.
Yeah. Well, let's leave it there. I think that covers it. We will have our first Euro Daily tomorrow, I would imagine, and then all throughout the tournament carrying you through it, and still have Arsenal Vision podcast as there's Arsenal news breaking and things to talk about with Arsenal. And also, Tim, Clive, certainly come on the Euro Daily with me and Phil, please.
I can do some Copa America stuff as well.
Yeah, that'd be a blast too. And I can cover the United States doing whatever CONCACAF is doing. I genuinely don't know what it is.
Copa America stuff would be great. I'm trying to learn these Brazilian players because I think we're going to buy a couple. So Tim knows a lot. So I look forward to that.
Tim, this Copa America, we're going to have to do another podcast on how it got moved, where it got moved to, and whether that was the best interest for anybody. But I'd be very curious to see how that pans out. But the less said right now, the better. I think we should leave it there. And again, please come join us in Vegas if you're able. We will do stuff in London. There was an event planned right before the pandemic hit that got canceled, and that stinks. But Vegas, August 19th to 22nd at the Wynn, is going to be really special. And a lot of people already sort of tentatively booking it. So I want to get those dates out before we announce it next week officially. Tim's on Twitter. Stroberto, thanks, Tim.
My pleasure as always.
My name's Elliot Smith. Nope. Clive's on Twitter. Clive PhD. Thanks, Clive.
Thank you very much.
We pod together so much. Do I even have to say hello and goodbye to you? My name is Elliot Smith. The Black Man on Twitter at Yankee Gunner. We love you. And we will talk to you after Arsenal 10. Transfer window new.
Mother's Day is almost here. And you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.